Welcome back to Toys on Tap. This week is a dope week with Resin Blood coming on, talking history, where he's come from, what he's doing, and where he's going. If you want to support Toys on Tap, you can like, follow, rate, review wherever you get podcasts. If you want to support a little more, follow us on all socials at Toys on Tap. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel where we do unboxings, and we're going to start doing toy history and all kinds of stuff like that. And if you want to support Toys on Tap a little more, you can jump on that Patreon. For $3 a month, you can get a little extra time with each artist between 10 and 20 minutes, and it's killer. It's great, tailored questions for specific artists, and sometimes we just rant, rock and roll. We love it. Now let's get back to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. All right, man, you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Let's do this. Dude, I am pumped that you're on.
Thank you.
At DCon, we kind of talked. It's tough. What was really cool, and I think is always what's cool about you, is at DCon, there's this, it feels like a vibe of like, you see us almost as family. Because like, I didn't want to disrupt sales or anything, but you like, held me there and we finished our conversation before anything, and that,
yeah,
which is dope. I think that means the world to me. Very few artists do that, but the ones that do, you guys just mean a lot, because that, like, at a time where you're supposed to be making money, you care about that conversation.
Yeah, I do.
And so,
and I feel like you know, I feel like I don't get to see everybody all the time, and you know, and I don't. It's important to make money and pay for the trip and everything, but I'm kind of weird with money, and I just make it and use it and keep going. So I don't know. You know, yeah. Those conversations are important. They're my favorite. You know, like so. Yeah. It's.
But let's introduce yourself before we go any further. People know and love you, but tell us your name and what you do.
Hey, my name is Eddie Kest, and I run Resin Blood, and I make resin, and I am producing vinyl also. And, you know, I got a tattoo shop, and in the basement, I got a pretty decent sized studio where I do quite a few things, print t-shirts. I got a dark room, and I paint and make toys and molds and sculpt. And I got a drum set down here, even a couch to take a nap and a TV and video games. And, you know, so I got a tattoo shop upstairs, and I opened up a toy store next door, but I actually sold my portion of it in the last year. So I couldn't do everything. I couldn't tattoo and make toys. And then I sucked at flipping toys.
Yeah, because you want to keep them or what?
Yeah, dude, I had a really hard time. I opened up my toy store with two friends of mine and during COVID, and I had the time. You know, the tattoo shop was closed. And I was going to these little sneaky school auditorium toy shows, and you know, I was picking stuff up, and I had flipped a bunch of stuff, but once we got the toy store open and my collection just started pulsating, and I mean, when you own the store, I was getting the stuff for nothing, so I had accumulated a lot of stuff, and you know, I love G.I. Joe ever since I was a kid, and I got these memories from 84, early 80s, and my dad Christmas morning introducing me to G.I. Joe. And I got a bunch of vehicles and a ton of figures. And I didn't take care of the first set. And then I have a later memory of in the late 80s where all my friends were turning like 14 and 15, and they were thinking about other stuff. And I was like 11 and 12 still. And I had gotten some money off my grandma for Easter, and my buddy in the neighborhood had this gigantic G.I. Joe collection, and he sold it to me for like $15. Mm. And I just like went, and I always remember that like I had to go back to school after the Easter break, and I fake sick to play G.I. Joe. And I remember my dad being like, "You ain't sick." You know, I was like,
That's crazy. I mean, I told people before, I grew up with the worst side of G.I. Joe. I grew up in the 90s and they had it. I think it was called G.I. Joe Extreme. And it was like the worst, the body positions, and they barely moved, and it just sucked.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I was listening to your podcast today with Delicious Again, Peter, and I had some similar things with him. And it was like, I was born in 77, 87, I was 10, and I started high school in 92. So, and there's a guy who's in the circle here, but he's real quiet. His name's Nito Bizzito. He does some foam work and he paints figures and stuff. He's a friend of mine. I grew up with since we were kids. And it was like I said, when I got into my teenage years, I almost can't even remember what happened to my G.I. Joe stuff. Like I turned 13 and I got into skateboarding and playing guitar and I drums and music, and it just disappeared. My mom must have threw it out. I just can't even remember. And so, yeah. But I can remember walking around the mall in the early 90s and looking at the Toxic Crusaders and all the McFarlane stuff and all those 90s G.I. Joes and all those 90s G.I. Joes with the toxic stuff and the water guns hooked up and all the fluorescent colors. I love that line. I love those toys. They're the best. But during that time, I didn't have them because I was worried about other stuff. So
Rotella Resale, your premier collectibles, toys, and novelty retailer. Find the best and hard-to-find diecast vehicles and action figures. Some of the most popular vinyl LPs, Zippo lighters, and comics. Support the best artists with our rock t-shirts and posters. You will find so much more at RotellaResale.com with free shipping on U.S. orders. Use promo code RADIO for 10% off your order. Visit RotellaResale.com. That is RotellaResale.com.
So to go back later and collect all that, which I do, I have a massive G.I. Joe collection, and I'm, I don't know, G.I. Joe is an abyss. I have the books and everything, and I see stuff. I'm like, what? I don't remember. I never saw this. Like,
yeah, you have I'm assuming you have the aircraft carrier then too.
No, I don't. And you talked about that today. And you know, I had an opportunity to buy one recently. But, dude, even one that's not in, like, great condition is $1,000. So, and you know what? I just moved out of one place that was bigger into a smaller place. And my G.I. Joe stuff's gigantic. It's a lot of stuff. And I have both headquarters and tons of vehicles, and it's all kind of packed away. I feel bad. I might display it down here because I spend all my time down here. So I have a lot of toys. I have a whole Ninja Turtles collection and a Marvel collection. And up in my tattoo room, I have a gigantic, a big Sifubi and rare figure collection. And so, yeah.
Yeah, dude, it's crazy to think. Like, I make a deal with my wife where, like, my collection stays at work. So it's, like, behind me, and I got some other stuff. And I'm super into, like, I'm into specific things. But when I get into that, I, like, hyperfixate. And so my brain just isn't happy until I get as many of whatever it is. And for me, it's, like, Ninja Turtle bootlegs from different countries. That's, like, my bread and butter. I love that so much. And so it's hard to, like, if art already, or like toy art is already hard for her to hang up or in the house, then that means like ugly Ninja Turtles are even worse to like display. So and it just, I don't know, I try to maintain my collection or like tone it down a little bit, but it's hard, man.
It is. It is. And you know what? I had a small mask collection, about 7 or 8 pieces with the boxes and everything complete. And I was going to sell them, and I organized them and got them together. then I started looking at them on eBay, and I'm like, man. And I started looking at them, and I'm like, after shipping and everything, it ain't even going to be worth it. I might as well. And I kept it.
Yeah.
And I was like, and that was last week. And I'm just like, I don't know. It's not like I'm in love with it. I love this, dude. I love it. But like, you know, I was a COVID guy. I came around during COVID. So, and I was sitting in my apartment, and I had toys all around me. I had all kinds of carded G.I. Joes hung up on the walls. But I wasn't like really obsessively collected. I was kind of just picking stuff up all over. And, you know, and you know, I actually, you know, it was during COVID and I was super like lost, and they shut down the tattoo shop. And oh my God, I was just like, I need something to do. And I was like, I want to make a toy. And I didn't even know about the scene at all. And I was like, I want to make a toy. And like, I had been looking at toys on Instagram, but I was looking at like NECA stuff and yeah, like action figure stuff kind of, but not like bootleg stuff. And this weird figure popped up and I was like, what is that? And it was Peter. And I feel like that experience was the experience for a few people. I feel like Peter is so hot, you know, that toy did so great. It's such a beautiful toy. And I feel like at that time, you know, it had gotten a bunch of people. And I looked at it and I was like, this is dope. Like, is there a comic for this or something? And I saw the hashtag bootleg toy and I hit it and all these blanks popped up. And I swear, I was sitting on my couch and my heart dropped and I went, and dude, my actual thought word out was, these motherfuckers are making these things, dude. How are they making these things? And I mean, it took a minute, dude. It took a couple of days. I started jumping on YouTube right away. There was nothing, dude. Nothing. If you wrote in how to make an action figure, maybe you got lucky and Craftsman came up and he made those little chicken things or whatever they were. And
yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah, silicone, duh. And I seen this dude making car parts on another video. And I was like, okay, I got to get silicone. I went to Michael's and bought a bunch of shitty silicone and made a toy. This big bulky toy that I kitbashed and used clay and everything. And then I got hip to SmoothOn and found out it was an hour away from here. And I called and they were like, yeah, we're open. You can come in, but you got to wear a mask. And I went up there. Thank God they were open, because a lot of stuff wasn't open. And I went up there and I bought everything and I started doing figures. And yeah, within like 3 weeks, Dove and me started talking. He complimented one of my figures. I put my first figure on card and Dove was like, that's dope. And I had already looked into DKE. I was like, okay. So when I looked at DKE for the first time, before I knew anything or anyone, I was like, look at these names on here. And I was like, I was almost confused. Like, oh, so Ron English and Kozik, like, wait. And like, I was like, okay, hold on. And like, I don't know, maybe I just wasn't digging deep enough, but like, or thinking deep enough. But then he hit me up and then he called me one day and I was like, all right, explain to me what's going on here. And I was like, is there a scene behind this? And he was like, yes, dude. And I was like, oh. Well, I see it. Like, I don't know. Like, how do you have a toy scene? It's just online. And he was like, well, there's toy shows. And like I wasn't real hip to it.
Yeah, it was. That's crazy. I mean, I'm one of the COVID people as well.
Right.
And just seeing all of the stuff. I mean, you started cranking quick. Like, and you got, what was interesting about watching you work is it seemed like you knew what you were doing from the beginning, which was so crazy. Like, I was just fucking up molds left and right and just spilling silicone, messing up, not knowing how to do certain things. And you're right. Like, people have said in the past that, like, when they first started, it was hard to find stuff. In 2020, like, toy making still wasn't
Like, you didn't find much more than Craftsman. It seems like the more it's progressed, even in the 4 years, there's so many videos out there.
That's why I think there's so many more guys now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easier now, I think.
Mm-hmm. And it's cool.
Jump.
Yeah.
I mean, I went on Amazon to get a new vacuum pump last week or like a month ago, and the whole setup came up.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, I had to read all about that and dig.
Yeah. You know, it was cool to, luckily someone helped. I mean, I don't communicate with this person anymore, but they helped me with figuring out like how to do a pressure pot and stuff and the things I needed on it. And then, it was crazy. And then even now there's other companies that are now coming out, dude. There's a company, I have a bag over here with three bottles of it. I think it's called Silly Putt. It is already mixed silicone that you put in the microwave and it liquefies it. And then you pour it out. And then if it doesn't work or when you're done using it, you cut it back up and put it in the bottle and you can keep reusing it. It's called Silly Knot. Remeltable mold maker. It's non-toxic. I don't know if it's actually silicone. They call it and claim that it's better. It's like, it's crazy.
Show me the label.
I'll send you one. I got one for free.
Yeah.
I bought two. I'll send you one after this. If you send me your address, I'll just send you one of these.
Man, you know, it might be good for like an emergency or like a quick weapon or, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, there's times I actually slowed down with doing this because I started to feel like I was suffering quantity for quality a little bit. Like, it's like, you know, I would do a show like Decon or Five Points and I would make a lot of blanks and a lot of extra stuff. You know, and I also don't think it's wrong to give stuff out to your friends and stuff, but I just would do these like power makes where I'd be like 2 weeks and I'd be working on five different card backs and working on all these toys. And I felt like I had to keep breaking down doors in my head. Like you said, when I started, dude, and I realized that, like, you know, like what you, like, I was like, oh my God, I could make so many music toys and different, like, political things and just stuff that doesn't exist. And just like, you know, and I really love it. It's awesome, dude. It's like, you know, it's just, it's been good to me. And I just, and like you said, like the community, you know, I mean, it is like a family. And sometimes even you like have quarrels with your brothers and stuff. And I'm in with some nice people. So, and I like everyone. So, I mean, I go down to Assembly Required and that's and Matt and all them kids that are down there. And then Five Points is a totally different show. And I don't know. And then Decon, it's fun. And I love it.
Let's walk through some of your life. I know at DesignerCon when we were talking, there was just so much that I wanted to dive into because you had talked about like going all over the country and kind of like struggling with a little bit of addiction. And then you like jumped into toys and then we have early childhood. I mean, I kind of want to talk to you about all of it. I like growing, like there's a point where you get into skateboards and get like kind of get rid of your toys, whatever that looks like. And then we have this gap before you get back into toys. Tell me about that gap. Tell me about that. Like, is art in your blood? What was going on in those gap years?
Yeah, definitely. And you know, my grandmother just passed away in 19 and she was my favorite. I think I was hers too. And she always said, like, I'd take you to the store and you know, I would get toys and stuff, but she said a lot of times you would pick to buy paper and markers and pens and paints and for hours I would sit there and do that. And you know, into school, into grade school, and I won art contests in grade school and stuff. And I got put into a Saturday afternoon art school thing in grade school because I won this art contest. I can remember the teacher coming into class because I went to Catholic grade school. I went to Catholic school. And I can remember the teacher coming in with this art teacher from this college and being like, we're having a contest. And it was like fifth grade was through eighth were fighting for the award to go to this art school on Saturdays. And I won. And I remember it being like a sign. Like I remember being like, I felt good. You know, I was like, I won at this. And I do this quite a bit. So, you know, and I remember thinking maybe because I'm always sitting there doodling, maybe that's, there's an artist I'm friends with named Jonathan Queen, and he always talks about doodlers, and he would say, like, don't underestimate those doodlers, them kids. Like, I during school, I got into music real young. My dad was in the Black Sabbath and Alice Cooper and Led Zeppelin and all that stuff. And so I was introduced to music real young. And in the 80s, during the, like, glam rock thing, I was real attentive on that, and which led into skateboarding and heavier music. And you know, I would draw album Metallica album covers and Misfits album covers and Slayer and redraw them. I mean, I would get in trouble in school, every Catholic school. I don't know about public school, but Catholic school, you gave your books back at the end of the year. And I mean, my mom had to pay for the books every year, like every page. Every page was a heavy metal mural. And I remember my mom being like, look at this, like, you know, and so look at these books. And I remember my mom would be like, she would pick something out of the book and ask me if I knew it, like the schoolwork. And she'd be like, no, you don't know, do you? But you could tell me anything about Black Sabbath, right? And I remember like laughing, like, yeah, but. You know, but yeah, and you know, right in the high school, you know, and growing up in Philadelphia, there was a lot of graffiti, and I had some friends who were hip to it before I was in high school, and we had these train tracks behind our school, and I had this art teacher named Mr. Gilbert, and we would sit in this dude's class all day. And he would let us, and the school was, I went from Catholic grade school to public high school. So it was a big difference for me. It was a big change, you know, a lot more freedom in the early 90s anyway. I don't know how it is now, but I mean, back then it was a big difference, you know. Catholic school was strict and public school wasn't. So, like, you know, so I learned a lot in that art class. I learned how to do photography and paint and, So yeah, and then we had these train tracks behind our school, like you know, a couple feet away behind the high school, and there was all these walls back there under the train bridge, and we would sit back there. We would go back there during school and paint a wall, and then come back in for lunch, you know, and we got really into graffiti. I was getting in trouble for it right away, even before I was 18. So it was like. You know, and then I would get locked up for graffiti, right? And my old man was the next cop, and then I'd get put on some little graffiti probation. And then when I'd go to do probation, I would meet all the other Philadelphia graffiti writers because they would send us to the same place. So then you would get hip to different things, like just like, you know, different places to get paint and different spots and different styles and different artists. I mean, you're like, it's so cool. That part of my life, because it was like, you know, an underground illegal art. That's how I always looked at it. It was like, and you know, like people say, hip hop. I was never a hip hop person. I was always a punk rock person, but I was always a punk. Like after during high school, all the heavy metal kind of went away, and I was more in punk for years. And I'm just saying, I was never like a hip hop graffiti guy, but that's what Philadelphia kind of is. But I kind of melded right in, and it's just, yeah, I still do it, and I still paint, and it's fun, and, you know, I stay out of trouble, but, you know.
That's crazy. I mean, to start young, yeah. I think it's... Empire Blister. Empire Blisters.
specializing in action figure blisters. 2.75-inch or 1/18 scale. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available.
Empire Blisters. Now sponsor Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSOMTAP 10.
Empire Blisters.
Like, that means art is just always flowing through your veins. And that's insane. That's cool that it kept going.
Yeah, and like, you know, every kid in Philadelphia back in the 80s and 90s had a graffiti tag. Mm-hmm. Like, if you went to school, then, well, like, you had a tag just because everyone had one, because it was, like, kind of hip for a while. So, and then that led to other stuff. I started tattooing real young, like 20 years old. So, and right out of high school, I started printing t-shirts. I had some odd jobs and I was always drawing and stuff. And I grew up with a bunch of guys and stayed friends with a bunch of guys that were real talented. And yeah, so the tattooing came young, which was another big thing for me. You know, it was big for me. It was, you know, I came from like a real broken home, and there at a young age at 19, 20, I didn't really have anywhere to go home to if anything went wrong. My parents broke up and split. So it was like, I had to take care of myself. So I started printing t-shirts at this place, and then I had gotten good at it and got a job at a better place. But during my 20, 21 years, I was transitioning, and I played music still at the time. And I had a buddy, like a best friend who I grew up with since I was a kid, die in a fire, and it really affected me. And a girlfriend had given me money for tattoo stuff and had actually surprised me with it. And I just started doing it right away, real heavy, kind of just like the toy thing. And like within like less than a year, I was in a pretty good shop downtown and I was making money. And I can remember the first night tattooing. And I don't think tattooers are making money the same way I was in the late 90s, but there wasn't any. And in 1998, there was 8 tattoo shops in Philadelphia, and now there's 200. So, you know, it's a little different now, but it was a lucrative way to make money. You know, it was, I made $1,000 my first day, and I remember being like, holy fuck, dude.
Yeah. How did you practice? Because that's real early on. I mean, now getting practice stuff and all the stuff going on, tattoo culture is huge. Like, back then, how are you practicing? How are you figuring out all that stuff?
Dude, I didn't practice nothing. I was cutting school and hanging out at tattoo shops all through high school. Almost every week I was in some tattoo shop. And I had a tattoo on my neck when I was 15. And not like, you know, now that's kind of like not rare. But in 1992, in early high school, I got my first tattoo freshman year. It was kind of heavy for everyone. You know, I kind of watched tattooing go from like bikers and gang people, and mothers and daughters and fathers were not getting tattooed, man. My dad was so mad about it. I was getting covered fast. And I was just, I wanted to be a tattooer for a long time. When I became a tattooer professionally, I had friends say, that's so weird. I remember you always saying you were going to be a tattooer. And you know, early on, I was helped out by my friend Mike Hooligan, and he's still around. He has a shop called Hard Times down in Philly. And you know, but short in a year or so in, I had gotten a job with a guy named Philadelphia Eddie, and his shops are still in the city, but he passed away. And he had become like a mentor to me. He was a real famous guy, real known tattoo guy, and real character with a pointy haircut, and like, you know, always had a suit on and a martini in his hand, like a cartoon character. And I mean, his tattoo history was just so amazing. And I was in with all these real, I mean, they were bikers, warlocks, and and he wasn't, but he was from Coney Island. He was just an old tattoo guy. And but the guys who worked there, 50% of the employees were bikers, you know, and I was just a kid. So I was around that element real young. And those guys taught me a lot about everything, money and trust and all kinds of stuff. And I learned how to tattoo correctly. And it was a wild scene, dude, back then. Like I grew up tattooing on a main strip. It's not even a main strip. It's a main strip with a bunch of little strips coming off each other and the bars and fights and just chaos on Saturday night. But you made a lot of money. And for a young kid, it was fun. So yeah, that's what I did all the way from 21 to like 31, 32. And then, you know, I got hooked on some drugs.
Yeah.
During the Percocet, like, boom, in the late 90s, the Percocets came out. I mean, those Percocets were around a little bit before that, but they blew up. Like the pill epidemic started around the late 90s. I was like, you know, falling victim to that. And it wasn't hard to eat a couple pills and tattoo all day. And it's not easy to sit in a chair and draw all day. And I got swept up in it like a wave of just, you know, whatever, drugs and rehabs and jail. And then the drugs got harder and then they got harder. And then, you know, I was just getting in trouble more. And then I started losing stuff. And so I went through a hard time, which like kind of almost led all the way up to 2020, because I got clean in 17. And then, so that's what happened with that. Like I was bouncing around, and after I started getting clean in 2012, and then from 2012, like there was an era where I didn't even want to get clean. I was just getting high and still working and kind of maintaining, but then it started to get bad and everything just suffered, everything, every bill and every responsibility. It was just awful. It was awful. And I'm ashamed that I had to go through that. And I mean, it sucks when you're on some weird bus going to a rehab, but you can't stop doing coke or heroin or stocks, dude. Oh, it's the fucking worst, dude.
What was the, I mean, 2017, I mean, it's admirable now that you've been clean and from trying to get clean in 2012 to 2017, I think that's a long road. What was it in 2017 that really like jolted you that said, all right, let's do this?
I got clean in 2012 and I bought a brand new Camaro SS. Like I saved my money and was working and was clean. And then I rented this condo down by the beach in Ocean City, New Jersey. So I was living pretty good. My tattoo shop was doing good. I bought the tattoo shop in 2009. So once I bought the tattoo shop, it went bad for a while. The tattoo shop did good, actually, but the money, I was just using the money wrong. When I finally like surrendered and was like, okay, I'm going to get clean here, I got to take a whack at this because I'm about to lose everything. You know, I cleaned up. And I lived at this rehab for like 9 months. I stayed there. They had this program there. It was like a little apartment. You could live in there. And I did it. And I didn't have to do it, but I did it because I wanted to stay clean. So I was really trying, dude. I was, dude. I was. I don't like jail. And I don't like being in trouble. And I put out this persona like I'm like this criminal drug addict. It's kind of a joke. Like, I mean, it kind of already happened.
Yeah.
And then like So I came back from it. So like that's kind of what I'm becoming known for. But I mean, it's kind of like just a joke. I like to make light of it because like shit happens, you know, and you can't fucking sit on it your whole life. You'll never move forward. So yeah. But anyway, I bought this car and I got this beach house and surfing was one of my hobbies growing up ever since I was a teenager. So like the Jersey Shore is like an hour away from here. So it's like, you know, I can be at the beach quick. So beach stuff isn't that weird for me. So I wanted to surf. Part of staying clean and stuff was getting out of Philly and living down the shore. And I would drive up in my car and fucking tattoo and go home. And And yeah, well, anyway, by 2017, I started drinking again, and then it just went south quick. I fucking crashed the car, and I was got a DUI, and then I went back to Philly, and I got another DUI like a week later. So I had to pay the lawyer for them, and I actually beat the one and did pretty good with the other one. So it didn't ruin my life completely, but yeah, 17, I was done. But then when they shut down the tattoo shop in 2020, I don't lie about it. Like, I got fucked up for like 3 days, and I'm diabetic. So I ended up in the hospital during 2020. It was a relapse, you know, it was a fuck up. And I mean, I still smoke weed and stuff. I'm not like a program guy, but like, I just don't do anything. No pills, no powders. I smoke weed, and like, I'll do a little bit of mushrooms now, but I don't really do anything else. And so yeah. I actually got sick during that COVID story. And then when I came home from the hospital, I was only getting fucked up for 3 days, and I ended up in the hospital. So I came home, and COVID was happening, and the death toll was on the news, and I was losing my mind, dude. And yeah, I started painting and drawing, and then I wanted to make toys, and I found it. So I feel like till this moment right now, like, it's like that moment in 2020, the first time I realized like I can go to Smooth On, and I got in my van and started it and drove up there. I feel like it's just like a flash to now. Like it's just been like go, like, and I've learned so much, dude. It's like,
yeah, there is a craziness that I see in, like, I remember when you opened, it was that toy shop, Toy Cantina, correct?
Yeah, it's still there.
I remember hearing that you were a tattoo artist, and then I remember seeing videos of you in a studio or something, like pouring toys and up late. And I mean, that's why I was able to suggest, like, hey, let's do a later recording tonight, because I figured you'd be awake. And I... Yeah. Like, I just remember hearing, like, you work nonstop, and then I started seeing it, and it is like the most admirable thing, because I'm a workaholic, but I do it on like my day job side, and I don't do it for toys as much. But what's crazy is, like, at one point you were doing everything, and I remember asking people, like, flat out, like, how is this happening? Like, he is crushing everything. How was he able to do that? And no one had an answer. So kind of help me out here. Like, you start the toy shop, and what?
Well, yeah, you know, and like, back to that other stuff, it was like, you know, when I opened the toy store, and I was already making toys for, like, I started making toys right when COVID happened, when they shut. So we didn't open up the toy store until that May or June, right then. Yeah, May. So what was that? January, February, March, April, May. So yeah, so there was 5 months where I was making toys, and I linked up with Dove. And, you know, dude, honest, man, I wasn't in the best place. I wasn't in the worst place when I found bootlegs, but I had just relapsed, and I was bumming, and COVID was happening. And, you know, I was bumming, and I had this shitty girlfriend that left me during COVID, and I to go drink with her girlfriends, and so I was like, you know what, fucking, I'm gonna do this. And I'll tell you, I was like, oh my god, I can make this, and I can make, oh my god, yeah. And then I'm looking at all the other stuff. I mean, me and my buddy Nito Bizzito, we were talking about all different, I was sending him different art toys and different things back and forth, more like resin pieces and stuff. And which came later for me now, but it was like, I was trying to figure it all out. That's all. And then Dove called, and then Dove broke it down to me, and I did my first run with Dove, and yeah.
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this. Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have an engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet. Oh my, we're doomed. Wait, salvation. Hooray, we're saved, DOV2. Limited edition custom artist-made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures.
DKE.
And then that happened, and like, and I continue to paint walls and paint canvases and paint tattoo flash and make shirts. And I was talking to a couple guys today, and I was like, you know, I'm working on a painting for Dove right now. Okay. And then last week I made these Gort toys. Last week I was fiending to do to make some molds. And so now this week I got this figure right here, and I'm going to make a card for this and drop this.
Hell yeah.
And you know, this Man Thing toy's been doing good. I don't know if you see that.
I mean, your Man Thing toy, like, that was, bro, that is doing incredible. And then your, is it Hedora that was at DCon?
Yeah, that did good. That's getting made in vinyl right now. I mean, that should be here any minute, man. They told me they were putting it in production like 2 weeks ago, and I haven't heard from them. I kind of leave them alone, but it'll probably pop up any minute or within the next couple weeks. So, I mean, dude, you know, the vinyl thing, I'm just in love with it. And I'm in love with all of it, dude. Like, you know, I met God Beast down at Assembly a couple years ago, and you know, and he educated me on the Glios thing and all that stuff. And there's so many little factions, and I like them all. And
yeah,
I mean, I want to make a produced G.I. Joe. Like, I want to design my own, and with the O-rings and the hooks and the screws. A lot of people try to steer me right away from it. But there's a few things I want to do. I'm going to work on these vinyls I'm working on vinyl probably for the rest of my life, but I'm working on that right now. And then I got some stuff going on. My money's tied up in a few little things. It's almost over with. And then when that's over, I'm going to free up some money, and I'm going to I'm building a universe in my head. And you know, sometimes I feel like I want to do too much, you know, like I want to draw a comic book and put out a comic and you know, I'm about to do this Bootleg Overdose, this YouTube show, and that all started from going live with the guys and then just having so much content. And my tattoo artist, the one dude's like a master painter. Mm-hmm. The other one makes the tattoo machines in the basement of the toy store. And then we got the toy store, and there's some characters over there now, right? And then I'm always traveling and doing all the toy shows, and I'm documenting everything. And I don't really want to be an interviewer, but I'm miking people up at the shows and saying, tell me your name and tell me about your product. And it's fun. And I was editing the other day for 12 fucking hours with my cousin, who's a professional editor, filmer, cameraman. And he's like, and we worked on all the, there's a whole clip about Assembly Required, and it looks pretty nice, dude. And it's neat. It's like, you know, One Trick Pony's on there, and he's explaining his stuff. And so it's like, I'm making this YouTube show. I don't want it to be the Eddie show. And also, I'm not looking to get a bunch of big names on there. I want to see all the little guys. You know, it's called Bootleg Overdose. And there's going to be a lot. I go to those shows. They're my friends. I want, like, you know, I want to get Zymon on there and all the hard workers, you know? And
yeah.
And yeah.
And we're going to plug the shit out of it. I want people, I haven't seen the first one yet, but I heard about it on Toys Alive. So I was like pumped. I saw you advertising it. So I'm real pumped about the, like, anytime there's toy content, I'm super pumped about it. And so, between that and all the stuff that you've had, is like, I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm excited. And you know, like I said, I got a guy who comes in, his name is Chris Russo. He's on my Instagram. He's our floor guy, and he went to school for recording music. So I'm making the YouTube show, like I'm working on it, and I'm working on editing. Like my job really is to make the content, whether it's asking someone else about their stuff and or me, whatever. And then I like kind of help, like, and then my cousin's like helping me break it down and do it correctly. So, but I'm saying you can't use regular music on YouTube. So I'm like, damn, I need music for my show, but I don't want it to be like public domain music or some stupid stuff. I want something like original. And so I have a basement full of guitars and drums and amps and stuff. So my boy Chris went to school for it. He comes in on the weekends to make extra money, answers the phone, takes out the trash and stuff. And he's talented too. He does wood cutouts and he sells the shit out of them. And he was like, dude, I can record. I can play drums too. And you can play guitar and drums. And then my business partner at the tattoo shop is the singer for Bad Luck 13, that they're like a known. And he has another band called Eat the Turnbuckle. They just had this big show for WrestleMania and he sings on some of the songs. So it's just like people who are just like stopping by, who actually play music, are like recording it with me and stuff. It's just been fun as fuck. And so the music was like a good sign, because the music's just like black metal and punk, and there's actually even some homemade hip hop like beats and stuff, because the dude has all these tracks he made. So I'm like, oh, cool. So I can use this and this. So I just want original music. So, so that's the first thing I was trying to get done. And I already had a lot of the content. So, tell me about
is this going to be a weekly show? Are you doing monthly? How's this going? What, like, break down what, because I remember watching the lives. And like,
yeah,
they were always late, but I was like in bed next to my wife, like watching on Instagram Live, and I loved it. It was like such a good thing to go to bed to. Like, tell me, like, what is, I mean, how, when's it coming out? What's the goal with this? I mean, I'm pumped. I can't wait, because I know that there's going to be cool stuff.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure yet. I'm going to try to make two episodes before I drop the first one, and I'm going to try for May 1st. So, but the clock's ticking, and it's the 18th, and we're supposed to do a double day of editing next Monday and Tuesday. So if I can get most of it done in those 2 days, I went out on the street one night with my boy CJ. He has this little company called Doom Future, and he makes clothes, does street art and posters. And I love the poster thing. I've been doing that since the 90s. I used to go to Kinko's and get images splat out, and I'd glue them up on the street. And it's fun. It's like doing big stickers. And I went out with him one night in South Philly, and he put up all these posters, and it's just fun. There's car cops going by and people all around, and it's just cool. And he's on it, and yeah, so it's like there's a little variety of other arts, but it's probably like 90% toys. My boy made a book about Thundercats, a whole figure book about every figure, and I did a little clip with him explaining the book and all of his research and all. So yeah, there's some interesting stuff on there all about the shows. And then I'm going to explain the first episode. I'm going to explain why I'm doing it. And I'm going to show the tattoo shop and show some of the artists and show me and show, I think Pendragon's going to be on it. And I think I already got, like, I just did a release with him and it went real well. And I talked to him the other day. He's in Germany and we're all different times. So I'm supposed to get another conversation with him recorded before I put him in the show. But, and yeah, all the interviews, and yeah, I just want to have fun. So,
dude, I can't wait.
Fun. Yeah.
The cool part about that too is like, you're a one man show. Like, I've seen, like, you paint, you do shirts, you do all this stuff. So you're going to knock out your own merch. You're going to knock out all your own. Like, that's so rad.
I'm wondering.
I'm outsourcing my ass off because I can't create some of the stuff. I'm like grabbing from all over. But people that don't do that are top notch. Like, you're killing it.
Thank you. you know, I'm lucky because I made shirts as a kid, like I said. So like 15 years ago, I bought this equipment and it's lasted. I just know how to take care of it and use it. So I'm making a shirt right now for the tattoo shop, and I'm making a new Resin Blood shirt next week. So, and I got all the stuff here. So, and yeah, it's really helped, dude. I print boxes and stickers, shirts, bags, and you know, I got the printer upstairs that prints out the plastic so I can do the photo emulsion in the dark room. So yeah, it's cool. I mean, besides the shirts and all, and I'm just making molds down here and sculpting and painting and all. I got the room. So yeah, it's been nice. I mean, I like it. So I'm just putting everything I know into it, you know?
Yeah. Tell me about the painting. What seems crazy is you go into shows and then like having tables full of toys and stuff and me seeing your work in person. And then at Decon, you had a giant painting behind or like up against a table. And yeah. It seems like from afar, at least, that you're like slowly doing that more and more and bringing that with you as well. What's kicking that on? What's going on there?
I don't know. I mean, I always painted watercolor and a liquid acrylic tattoo flash illustration style stuff. I mean, you can do landscapes with that stuff too and all. So it's not like just an illustration look, but these paintings, I have to say, it's always been kind of a pipe dream to be a painter. And it seemed like, you know, it always felt like just like tattooing felt out of reach as a kid, painting or toy making. Toy making felt like it was out of reach. And me and Plagued Earth Productions lives in Texas now, but he used to pierce for me in 2011. And he was like, dude, I remember in 2012, he worked here for a few years. He was like, I remember you always talking about wanting to make toys, dude. Like, I remember having conversations with you about like how you were trying to contact company. And I would get that old school, like, you know, it's going to be 20 grand. It's going to be 15 grand. So you'd always get steered away from it. And there are gatekeepers in this thing. Definitely. I got gatekeeped out by some people in the beginning. And so I don't know, man, the painting, it just like, I don't know. I wanted to be, I painted walls and I painted like tattoo flash and different things. And I just wanted to start doing bigger canvases. And also I started working with airbrush more. So I was like, man, I can cover some space with airbrush. That was kind of like, you know, like when I paint walls, there's nothing like it, dude. There's nothing like going up to a fucking wall that's 6 foot tall and 25 foot long. And you paint something gigantic in like a couple hours. That's like, I don't know. That worries me about the show also. Like, will the bootleg scene care to see a street artist? I think they wouldn't mind to see other arts and
hell
stuff,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Right. That fits right in the same vein. That in zines and
yes,
like merch. Yes. It's all the same vein.
Yes, yes. But I want to make sure I keep it like, you know, 90%. 85% toy, like, you know, I want to make sure like I keep it that way. But anyway, back to the painting. I started doing big ones, and yeah, these big paintings are hard to sell. And I mean, dude, I haven't really done any small paintings, really a few, but I've been and I have these two customers. I mean, dude, I've sold 15 paintings this year but don't get too excited, but 15 paintings, right? Of gigantic. This one right here is 3x3. It's 3 foot all around. Okay. So, or maybe it's 4 foot all around. It is. It's 4 foot all around. I think. No,
it's a big
it's
canvas.
All around. Yeah, it's big. But anyway, you know, I sell those for, you know, 13, 15 now. It depends. This one right here would definitely be 15. It's been a lot of work. I've been on it for nights and nights. And you know, but I got these two friends that one of them was a tattoo client and one of them was a friend, and they just been buying them. And I'm like shocked, like almost like monthly, both of them have come by and like, I'll take this one too. And I'm like, really? And I actually questioned the one dude the other day, like, his name's Jay. And he's like, it was Krang. Oh no, it was the Toxic Crusader painting I did. And I'm trying to do those kind of paintings, hoping maybe like a collector will be like, oh, I can put that on my wall around my collection or something. So, and I'm even building my own frames, my own canvases. So, and I'm making weird shapes and stuff. I don't know, maybe you could put them around shelves or something. I don't know. I'm just like messing around all the time. And the guy said to me, dude, I kind of feel like it's going to go somewhere and I want to have all the early stuff. And I was like, well, thanks, you know, cool. So I appreciate the support. You know, I just, you know, and like I've sold other ones around, but there's been a few people who have just been buying them. So I don't know if that's a thing or what, but, you know, I don't know.
That Krang one was out of this world. Like watching you do that and watching it come together was insane.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. And I probably, I had a few people hit me up for that online, but you know, the guy came by and bought it. So I was like, all right, cool.
You
Nothing
did.
Like cash.
Yeah. You did one of my favorite pieces too. You have a piece of flash. A sheet of flash, and it's like superheroes and all kinds of stuff, but it's in your style, and there's like Phantom Star Killers on it too.
Yeah,
that sheet is so insane. And then what irritates me is like, I'll see that sheet, and then sometimes at like the shows, people will get them tattooed, and it's like, what? Where was I?
Yeah,
and so it's such a good piece, and it like fits your aesthetic super well.
I'm gonna do another one. I'm already working on all the designs. I work on outlines on paper and stuff, and I'll take pictures of them and put them on my iPad, or I'll do some on Procreate, and then I'll get all the designs together, and I'm gonna do another big villain sheet, and keep it going, because you know, dude, I have a lot of fun tattooing them, and when I go to assembly, especially, and decon. Both them shows, I do tattoos out of my room. And just because people are asking me before the show, and I'm like, yeah, I'll do tattoos. So I love doing a Phantom Star Killer tattoo, you know? So
yeah. I have one on my leg based off of, man, I can't remember who did it. Junk Fed, I think. He drew Phantom Star Killer as an ice cream. And I got that one tattooed on my leg.
You do?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. And dude, were you a big Phantom Starkiller fan?
I am. I mean, Peter's been on the podcast like 4 times, and we've just talked through stuff, and he had an episode that I actually had to delete because it was about all the like craziness. Yes. Yeah. So
yeah.
He's like really cool, and I like the Phantom piece, and so yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. He's, you know, one of the ones, those early guys, you know, that, you know, Suck Lord and him and Healy and those guys had big successes, you know, and still do, you know, but I feel like that window has closed, and, you know, I feel like it's not, don't you feel like it's kind of like not that new anymore?
Yeah, you know. I think that we are at a point where, people go from collector to maker very quickly. Yeah. And I started making, and then I went to collecting, which I think is a fun way to do it. But I think it's, because it's not so new. I mean, my other grail piece is, this one. Yeah, this is from 1989. Like, resin work has been around for longer than we thought.
Where'd you get that from?
So it's made by Steven Hillenburg and Bert Payne. Steven Hillenburg did the show. He created SpongeBob. And when they were going through art school in the 80s, they like crushed this, and they did three. They did one in 89, one in 91, and one in 96. And that's a run of 1,000, and they sold out. So like, I'm learning that like,
it's been around.
Yeah. Yeah. It was around for, I don't know, years before Suck Lord came to the table, and then Suck Lord came to the table and produced it like no one had seen. And right. Then all these people coming in, and it's like, at this point, it doesn't feel new anymore, which is okay. But
it's evolving. It's evolving, and nicely, I feel.
It is. Yeah, it's cool. It's because it's not so new, and because it's becoming more and more well known, I think the whole entire scene is moving in the right direction to make this last for a long time.
I would have never made a YouTube show called Bootleg Overdose in 2021.
Right.
Because the scene was smaller and more personal, and you know, I mean, and you know, yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of people, and even at Assembly Required, there's I mean, definitely a decon of 5 points, there's clicks within clicks within clicks, but I mean, even at Assembly Required, there was like little groups of these guys, and these guys came together, and it's just, yeah, and there's like, you know, you can do it, it's kind of like skateboarding, dude. You can do it by yourself, and you know, it's magic, dude. It is. I fucking love it. Like, and like, there's nothing like creating something and working. Like, dude, it's just the process. Okay. It depends on what it is. Like, let's say Man Thing. Like, you know, I sculpted that from scratch. So I sat down with the idea and I did a little sketch, and then I started going. And actually, when I was doing Man Thing, I almost gave up on it. And I was on the phone with Jonathan Queen, and I was like, man, I'm about to not finish this. And he was like, no, that has potential. And I listened to him, and I was so happy I did, dude, because when it was done, I was like, oh, I like it, you know? But I never thought it would do what it did, you know? I sold over, like, dude, I must have sold almost 100 of them now. Mm-hmm. Like I sold 22 at ZoloCon, and then within 2 weeks of the time I made it, I sold 62 of them, and then it continued to, but then it died off. Like the 1 week I sold 32 of them, and the next week I sold 6.
Yeah.
So I was like, whoa, that's weird. Like I thought it was gonna be like 22. Like,
yeah,
like, you know. So I put them on my store, and I'm grateful for any sale, you know. And I got some great customers and a lot of repeat customers, and you know, my website's fun, and I'm starting to send out emails more now and pay attention. It's hard, dude, to pay attention to DMs and tattooing and making and painting, and I'm always getting my emails for my shows, and you know, so I like to do the shows, dude. I got 5 points coming up in June. I'm doing that Kaiju show in Dallas with Playgirls Productions in August, and then you know I'll do Decon, and then we'll do ZoloCon. So I need one more show in between Zolo after March, like in between April and May. I wish there was something I could do.
You're selling like crazy, which is awesome, like hotcakes. Which, and a Man Thing sculpt, is it hits so many different points, especially because like its size and like how it's sculpted, it's different. I think when things are different, they go crazier, which is awesome.
You know, dude, I was at 5 points this year with Earth Digging Talkie and Jonathan, and there was this guy around the corner right next to us, pretty much on the corner. His name was Fifth Turtle. Mm-hmm. You ever hear of Fifth Turtle?
Yeah.
And he does like little perfectly glassed resin. I think one of them was actually a turtle. And they're kind of like, I mean, it's way less detailed than Man Thing. They're like smooth. And there are even some of them are smaller than Man Thing, but some of them are like Man Thing size, right? It's like even like, it's like 2 inches, you know?
Yeah.
And the dude had a line around the corner, and I remember just being like, and you know, I was selling some stuff, but not too much at that show. I didn't do 5 points, is always kind of weird for me, but And I remember looking at it and I didn't understand it. I was like, hell, wait, you're telling me all those people want those little resin things? Like I almost didn't even know that like people were like glassing stuff perfectly. I know people like clear toys that look glassy perfect, but I'm just saying, I didn't realize there was this whole other little trinket kind of resin scene going on. And, you know, I just like to try different stuff, man. You know, I'm in the middle of sculpting an action figure over here. I'm in the middle of sculpting another figure that's going to match the Speed Skull and his size. It's like a Dr. Doom knockoff that I sculpted from scratch. So it's like I like to try different stuff. I want to make a 3.75 line of toys that gets produced. And you know, so anyway, I just, when I go to these shows, I get to learn and see what these people are doing. And, you know, not all the community's real good, dude. And the communities, there's a different factions of the community. There's, when you go to DCon, there's a whole group of just toy artists that paint nostalgia stuff, and they don't even make toys, but they're famous and they're great and great artists. And there's the Sufubi guys and the art toy guys. And so it's like, you know, then there's the figure guys. And I mean, even when we're in a bootleg alley, up the side of the alley there, there's like, last year was that guy with that little 3.75 produced Action Force line.
Yeah.
And they're like knockoff G.I. Joes. I bought a couple of them. They're awesome, dude. And I couldn't get any answers out of that guy. And he's doing that, making articulated G.I. Joe style toys. I love that, dude. And but they're not bootlegs, you know. And there's a lot of little things, you know. And so, and like I said, yeah, I've made some of my best friends in this stuff, you know. And I've also had my heart broken by people. And I've had people dude, you know, I was telling Dub the other night, you know, there was a guy that came around the same time we did. And he's not around anymore. He kind of burnt some people, but he did real good in the beginning, dude. And I remember doing a DKE show, and I made 20 toys and I sold 6. And he made 32 and sold 32. And was I jealous? I remember, I was. I wasn't vocally jealous or angry or anything, but I remember being like, fuck, man, that dude's so lucky. But I was happy for him, you know, and I would tell him that. And, you know, and Dove paid a lot of attention to that guy. And I remember being like, I wish Dove would pay attention to me or want my toys. And you know, I've had some people who I thought were friends, like, get mad at me. Or, like, I mean, I guess when you're, like, you know, talking to a bunch of different toy makers and maybe somebody's not doing as well as they'd like to be. And they're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, packing up 16 packages. I mean, dude, I don't sell that good, you know, like I sell okay. I'm doing okay at it for a bootleg toy maker. I mean, so last, I mean, including the Pendragon thing, which was only 4 toys, and then my toys last week, I sent out a good amount of packages. And sometimes when I post up the boxes, I'm letting the customers know they're out. But I hope people don't think I'm like showbone or anything. I mean, but that's what everyone does. They show their packages. I don't know. I just love it. And I've never had even a complaint. I mean, I always try to send a little something extra and answer everybody and all, you know. It's just, I'm older, like I'm in my 40s. So to be able to like make something right here from scratch and then package it and send it out, I got a label maker, you know what I mean? It's like the whole deal. I fucking love it, dude. And I got packages that have to go out right now. And I mean, packages, a lot of people hate it, dude. I know someone who makes toys who could probably be selling more, and he doesn't want to send packages out. And I understand, it's a lot of work, but if you do it smart, you can have them picked up.
Yeah. So, you know, you were talking about it being like tough a little bit to respond to DMs and sending emails and keeping up with socials and tattooing and all that stuff. Dude, when bootleg overdose goes into full swing, it's going to be one more app. Like, Toys on Tap is it's a beast to like keep up with and constantly do stuff. And you're about to
I was going to ask you about that.
It has to be. Well, let's have an honest conversation. This week, I've said this about other artists too, because they've like helped me out. You kind of saved my ass, and it's because, I don't want to say the name, but it's because someone like no called, no showed. And that happens sometimes. And it's not, I get that things happen in life, and I get that that's a thing. And so I don't hold it against them, but man, it puts a squeeze. And so it's like, I work 40, 50, like there's some weeks where it's like 60 hours. And so I'm like figuring out where to put the artist, who's going to respond quick. How do I edit in time? How do I make clips, do content, do all that stuff? And it's a lot, dude.
Yeah.
But I do it because I love it. Like, I love going home tired after an interview, knowing that like I was in that interview. I was in that the whole time. Like, I'm drained because it was so much fun. And it like, I love that. I love that feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're good at it, dude. And the show sounds great. Yeah. I put it on YouTube today, and when it came over the stereo, you know, I mean, you're just looking at the logo and stuff, but it's almost like you can see it. I swear. So I got that Delicious Again, Peter. I listened to the Strafe one today too. That Delicious Again, Peter interview was great. That dude's amazing.
Yeah. He was cool to have on, you know,
he sounded real cool.
Yeah. And I mean, if you haven't talked to him, reach out to him. He's super receptive. He's cool. Yeah. What's interesting is, so we talked about how this scene is growing. There is artists everywhere, all over the world that I've interviewed. And I can tell you, like, people are listening all over the world, which is awesome. And it's cool. The scene is just growing in a way that I didn't know that it would have. And it's great. Like, there's the hard part that I run into is like, I don't have enough people that can translate. So like, there's Bonecos Estramos in Brazil. Yes. I think that's where they're at. And
dude, the scene in South America
is insane.
One of my favorite dudes is Kalaka. And he's down there, right? Ain't he in Brazil?
Argentina.
Argentina. And you know, Legion and Sophie, yep. Of course. I love Sophie. And a lot of them, dude. Dude, you know, I bought a toy off that guy, Regine.
Yeah, dude, I have a set. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, no, I bought a sleep toy. It's actually like a Migo. It's like a doll that he did. It looks like the band Sleep, the stoner rock band. But I mean, it's an amazing toy. I had to buy it. And that was 5 years ago I bought that.
Yeah. So he makes, so Street Sharks is one of my favorite brands. They make bootlegs in South America, which are smaller and stocky. And then he bootlegs the bootlegs, and they are pristine. His packaging is off. Like, if shipping wasn't too much, like, I'd buy so much more.
I want to get some stuff made in South America. It's one of my bucket list things to do.
Yeah.
I'm going to start looking for some different manufacturers and stuff. And I'm really into it. I want my whole website to be produced toys. And, you know, I want to try to, like, continue to keep it real and get it going. It's hard, dude. You know, it takes months for these toys to get done and show up. And I'm dealing with China, and they don't speak English, and you're going back and forth through translation. It's kind of scary, you know? And then you're sending $5,000 to a ghostly, weird PayPal account, and you're like, please be for real, you know? And so, yeah, and I had some other things happen to me in the beginning where I thought I had a toy getting made, and then they kind of fucked me over, so... But I think that, you know, there's been a couple toy makers that have put out a bunch of vinyl real fast. And I didn't want to do that. I wanted to think about my toys and put out good stuff. And it actually has taken me longer to put out my second toy than I liked it to be. But, you know, I felt like the Speed Skull kept me busy.
Yeah.
And it still is. And it's like every time I think I've done it all, someone has another colorway idea and they buy them. So it's a fun little toy, dude. I'm really proud of it. And I didn't even know, dude. I just made something that I thought was cool. And it's gotten such a positive reaction. And Mr. Unnatural is the Hedora R. Crumb knockoff thing. I mean, yeah. We talked about it. So I'm really excited about it. It's kind of different for me. It doesn't have any articulation. It has a cap on the bottom that says Resin Blood and with the bat symbol. So I'm excited about that. I mean, and then I think I'm going to get Man-Thing made. I just had it 3D scanned. And what I do is I work on my toys with monster clay and other clays, plastiline. I use all kinds of stuff down here. And then I make it in resin. Usually, if it's Sifubi looking stuff, I'll try to rotocast it. And, you know, when you show someone a toy that's hollow, like these Frankensteins that I made for Zolocon. And these didn't do half as well as Man-Thing. So it's just that easy to, like, you know, I mean, dude, you can work on a toy for a year and put it out and it doesn't sell. It's really weird. I've seen it happen to a few people. And so, like, you know, I'm really proud of that toy. I'm happy that it did what it did. It got me attention and it did what it was supposed to do. And I'm proud of it. So I don't know. I just want to put out good toys and I feel like I'm just getting started. So, you know.
But, yeah. I mean, the question. What's next? Like, I mean, it seems like you love vinyl. So the question, are you moving more into vinyl than resin? Like, what's next for Resin Blood?
That's what I'm saying, like, with this Speed Skull. Like, I thought when the Speed Skull came that I was probably going to want to just do vinyl and then I was going to just start dumping money into pumping out vinyl. But like I said, I didn't want to put out junk and I'm busy. And, dude, I love resin. I talked to Paul Kaiju about it, right? Paul's my favorite toy maker. And in the whole D-Con scene, let's just say the floor of D-Con, Paul's my favorite. I like a lot of them a lot. I like the Creature Bazaar guys. I love Last Resort toys. I always have. And he was one of the first I ever saw online and everything. And Scott, Barbarian Rage makes such a beautiful toy. And you know, it's like I thought maybe I was going to move away from resin, but Paul Kaiju was saying to me, like, Eddie, that's what I did. I made resin for years before vinyl. And then when I switched to vinyl, it shot off. But I sculpted that plastic card back. And that got such a positive reaction. And I sold so many of them. And people loved it. And I could do different figures with it. And it's like sculpting stuff from scratch, you know, and making it in resin is a lot of fun. And so is bootlegging. And so is doing the packaging, you know, and it's like, you know, there's a lot you can do. So what's next? More, just more, dude, more vinyl, you know, more
just
hours.
More. Yeah.
Like I said, man, I used to be a drug addict. So I got this crazy head that's always on 10. And look, man, I know I'm a lot for some people. I know I can see it on some people's faces and stuff and all. I'm not a bad guy. And I'm not, I mean, I've been in my troubles and all, but you can look my name up. I've never done nothing I'm ashamed of. It's just graffiti and drugs and fucking a little bit of guy on guy fighting and stuff. But I'm just saying, like, you know, I just there's nothing else to do. And Philadelphia is kind of crazy right now. And I don't drink like that anymore. I don't go to bars and I'm getting older and I wanted to be an artist. And I wasted a lot of years getting fucked up. And I was during those years that I was high, and let's say that's the years of 2008 to, like, you know, 2017. Those were the years up until 2008-09. I was still winning awards. I was flying all over the country to every tattoo convention. There was no social media, so I was in tattoo magazines every month. I would go to Tower Records and my little pictures with my name would be in tattoo magazines. And I would go to tattoo conventions and people knew who I was because I was in the tattoo magazines. And I flushed it down the toilet, dude. I really did. When I was getting high, people would be like my friends would be like, where is he? And they'd be like, dude, he's doing fucking dope in this apartment with this chick. And I'd be, and then people would come and try to get me and shit. And you couldn't talk to me, man. I don't know. I had a breakup with my kid's mom. And I was upset. And I flushed it, man. And I always hated myself for it. And when I found bootlegging, you know, it didn't just give me an opportunity to like dump all the stuff I had learned over the years into it. It had given me, it had recharged all those things. And also, like, it's even recharged my tattooing, dude. And now I have a whole new style that I want to tattoo, and I'm doing those tattoos. And I've been doing those weird monster sticker tattoos with the pink and the blue, and you know, I'm having fun, man. And that's what's always next. So Bootleg Overdose is just like, when we were going live on Instagram, I wanted to show more of what me and Drew, Playgirl Productions, we're always painting toys. And me and Drew are always on the phone talking about toys and painting and this and that. And, you know, I would talk to Scott for a while, and I talked to Jonathan Queen and all different guys. And you know, today I was talking to Barely Human, and I'm going to paint some of his toys this week. And I mean, what a dope life, right? You get to fucking talk. And Barely Human is a guy I look up to, you know, Paul Kaiju, all them guys. And dude, I owe it all to Dove, you know, like Dove is someone who pretty much was like, dude, what's up? When did you start making toys? And I was like, last week. And he was like, can you make me 20? And I was like, I remember being kind of like, for what? And like, what do you want them for? Like, I didn't even really know what was going on. I just wanted to make some art, and I saw it, and you know, so, and Dub really taught me a lot, dude. But Scott, Barbarian Rage taught me a lot too, a lot. But Dub, like, I didn't even know how to mail those things out. I was packing up my first box, and Dub was like, we were FaceTiming. He's like, let me see. He's like, no, dude, take every one of them out right now. Put paper around them. I didn't even know how to pack stuff. And he let me, dude, I was only making toys for less than a year. And I was like, can you get me a booth at Decon? And he said, yes. I wasn't kidding. I was expecting him to say, like, give it a year. And he was like, all right, if you think you can do it. And that first Decon, I did good. That COVID one, remember?
Yeah.
Were you there?
Yeah.
Yeah. You were. That was your first one and my first one. Yeah. And I remember you guys talking after that, and different people being like, even Resin Blood, like, I didn't see that coming, and he's cool, and like, it was so fun. And you know, there's some people, like I said earlier, if sometimes I'm on the phone with people and their toy didn't sell the weekend before, and they're like, and I'm like, oh, I sold beans. And I don't know, I've caught some jealousy, and it's kind of heartbreaking. And it's like, it's not easy for everyone. And I do have a unique situation that has allowed me to really pump 100% into this. When other people have to get up, there's toy people I talk to and I forget they have day jobs. I'm hitting them up at 4 a.m. like, yo, check this out. And then, like, you know, I'm like, oh, shit, they have a job. And, like, so, I don't know.
Yeah. That it is crazy. I think that you came on the scene, meteoric rise, and you're crushing it. And so it's, like, no doubt that we're going to see and love more of your work. So I can't wait to see it. You know, the last end of this podcast is all about the artist and like them plugging upcoming projects and stuff. And then we move into something called the Nitty Gritty, which goes on the Patreon. That's like specifically tailored for each artist. So I got two things for you, but before that, please plug everything about you, where they can go to get your stuff, when Bootleg Overdose drops, how they can collab with you if you're into that, all that stuff.
Okay, my name is Eddie Kess, and I have an Instagram that's actually my tattoo page. That's @EDDIE Kess, Eddie Kess. And then I have Resin Blood, and you can go to my bio, and my website's on there, resinblood.com. That's where you can get. I got those prints on there right now. They're a little pricey, but I paid a lot for those big flashes, that big flash sheet. And there's always toys on there, and there's even some art for sale. I always leave a couple paintings up there. And, yeah, you know, Bootleg Overdose is in the works. I'm just shooting for May 1st. If not, it'll be early, mid-May. I'm hoping to do 2 a month. You were asking me earlier. I don't know if I can do every week. I mean, I might be able, like, so I'm just feeling it out. I'm going to see how it goes. What if it airs and everyone's like, this dude's an idiot. Like, you know, like, so I kind of don't think so, but there's too many people involved and it's too fun for just a flop. But so, I want people even to maybe be able to make a 4-minute video from home and I'll air it on the show. Like, let artists make their own little bio. I don't know. I'm still playing around with the idea. If you have any ideas, but something where like, you know, maybe like a flash clip at the end of the show. And I have a lot of ideas, dude. So yeah,
dude. It's incredible. Thank you so much for coming on Toys on Tap.
And thank you to everyone for the support.